Do you remember that phase in children, or maybe you as a child got into that phase where you began to ask why about everything? Parents usually humor you the first time, maybe even the second, but after a while they begin to wear thin on the constant asking of why, to the point where they say something really helpful like, I don't know, go ask your other parent, or anything along those lines. I don't think I ever actually outgrew that phase. I learned that it only became socially acceptable to ask why at a certain point, and then I was no longer allowed to ask, and I had to go find the answer myself. But I don't really think I ever actually outgrew this desire to keep asking the question why, as long as there was something to ask why about. I mean, some questions run the course, then you'll beat the dead horse. That's not the point. It's interesting because we ask why, and I genuinely wanted to know why we do a certain act. Why do we commit to a particular action? Why is it that we engage in these things in a particular way? And this is the constant redress, the constant coming back to. And I think about it, especially when I was in seminary, I was the head sacristan at Mundelein. And head sacristan is a really fancy term for guy who carries keys. It's really the short answer of what I did. I unlocked things. That was really the very advanced and technical job that the head sacristan had. And I still remember the guy who was teaching me, and we were co-head sacristans for a while, and he transitioned out, and I transitioned in, and he always carried a can of WD-40. And I asked him, why do you carry a can of WD-40? And he paused, and he looked at me, and he said, I don't really know. The last guy had a can of WD-40, and he told me to always have a can of WD-40, so I've always carried it. I said, did you ever use it in your 3.5 years of being head sacristan? And he said, no, not really. He said, oh, good. So I asked him who he had taken over for, and I found out who it was. It was a priest of the Archdiocese of Chicago and took care of patients. One day he was at the seminary and he was preparing for something, so I went up to him and said, you were head sacristan here? He said, yes. I said, did you carry a can of WD-40? He said, of course, it's part of the job. I said, why? And he paused. And he looked at me. He said, I don't really know. I never really used it in my 3.5 years of being head sacristan. The last guy told me to always have a can, so I always carried it with me. I'm not really sure why, but I always had it. This goes on, by the way, for 12 years of guys. 12 years before I got there, something happened that actually points the whole thing out. It took me 2.5 years to figure out why all of them carried WD-40 without ever knowing why they carried WD-40. See, what happened was 12 years before I got to Mundelein Seminary, they updated all of the locks. You see, the locks had been about 100 years old when they updated the locks 12 years prior to when I got there. And it turns out that 12 years prior, in the wintertime, a 100-year-old lock doesn't always want to move. And so they'd have to bring the can of WD-40, otherwise they'd be locked out of the church. And every guy since the new locks hasn't needed it, because I know this comes as a shock to all of you, if you update things, they work better. So they didn't need WD-40 for 12 years after they got the new locks, but they always carried a can. And it reminds us, it calls back to us, why are we doing these things? And don't get me wrong, sometimes the answer, because we've always done it this way, can lead you to a greater understanding of something bigger if it has another reason. But if the only reason we have for doing something is because we've always done it this way, it begins at a certain point to beg the question, but why have we always done it this way? My very first assignment, brand new priest, was at Holy Family Parish, and my first day there was also the first day of a new pastor. So they got a new pastor and a new associate on the same day, and I would say, okay, what are we doing? And they'd say, well, we're doing this now. And I'd say, why? And they said, because we always did it this way. And I said, well, that's good enough for me. I'm not in charge, so I don't have to ask, so I just have to do it this way. And then the pastor would come right behind me and say, what are we doing? And I'd say, we're doing this. And he'd say, why? And he said, because we always done it this way. And he said, that's not an acceptable answer. You will give me a better answer or I'm leaving. Which began a very interesting cycle because he began to ask that question a lot. And in fact, the secretary began to actually begin to roll her eyes because she would go, because we always, wait a minute, I have to go. Because we have to have that reason for why we do things. And don't get me wrong, there are things that we have done for thousands of years within the church, and we have a legitimate reason why we do them. Some people might answer because we've always done it this way, but believe it or not, there's a long answer too, and we should never underestimate that the things that we continue on, we better have a good reason. Because if we forget the why, if we forget the reason why we're doing things, we lose a sense of what it is that we're supposed to do. Don't underestimate. I remember that the students of our school do this all the time. It's important to have goals. We have to know what our goal is. We have to be focused on that goal. And we can have lots of intermediary goals. We should have lots of goals. But I always remind the students, I say, what is our final goal? What is the end result? What are we hoping for after everything else is said and done? And we're learning this. We're focused on heaven. We should have lots of goals in between. There's lots of things we should be working on before we get there. But we should never forget that all of us should have an eye on the prize that is heaven. And if we forget that, if we lose sight of that, then we begin to lose a sense of the why of some of the things that we do in the intermediary. Consider for a moment the gospel. We have in this gospel two men. Jesus says there are two men, they both go to the temple. One was a Pharisee and one was a tax collector. And immediately every person listening to that story went, oh, one guy is really holy and one guy is a sinner. It's not fair because just because he was a Pharisee didn't make him holy, and just because he was a tax collector didn't make him a sinner, but in their minds it did. So they just wrote them both off. One guy's holy, one guy's not. And the Pharisee went up and he took his position, which means he stood up front. So I know he's not Catholic, but you know, he took his position up front. And he says this prayer to himself. That's what it says. He said this prayer to himself. He didn't even go to pray to God. He went to pray to himself. And he said, aren't I great? I'm supposed to fast once a week. I fast twice a week. We're supposed to tithe on the income that we receive this week. I tithe on the whole thing I have. Look how special I am because I do these things. Except the problem is he forgot why. He forgot why he was supposed to go to the temple to pray. He forgot why he was supposed to fast. He forgot why he was supposed to tithe. On the other hand, we have the tax collector, the publican, standing in the back, won't even look up. He's a big gatherer, I know he's there all the time. He's all the way in the back, he won't even look up. He says, oh God, be merciful to me, a sinner. It's not that he's trying to bring himself down, it's not that he's trying to make himself feel bad, it's not that he's, you know, throwing ashes on his head, aren't I terrible? No, he's not doing any of that. He's trying to be honest, he's having a conversation with the God whom he loves, whom he knows, whom he's striving for. And what does he say? He says, God, be merciful to me, because I know I've sinned. Fascinating thing about it is Jesus says, the latter goes home justified. The tax collector goes home justified. But it's not that God told him. It's not that God parted the clouds and stepped down from heaven and said, oh, by the way, you're doing it right, you're on the right path, you're doing great, you're justified, don't worry about it. He doesn't do that. Pharisee goes home not justified. God doesn't stop him either. It's not like God jumps down from the heavens and smacks him on the back of the head and says, no, you haven't figured it out yet. Keep working on it. No, he doesn't do that. But he lost sight of the goal. He lost sight of his purpose. Why he was doing those things. And that's the incredible thing about it. And it's not that we have to be down on ourselves. It's not that we have to only stand in the back and bow our heads and beg for God's forgiveness. That's not the only way to pray. Don't underestimate. Paul writes to Timothy. And realize that Paul's writing to his friend. He knows Timothy. He brought Timothy into the faith. He made Timothy a bishop. He is close to Timothy. And Timothy is near and dear to his heart. And he writes to him. And what does he say? He says, my time is at hand. Paul's in Rome. Paul's in Rome and he's been sentenced to death. He went to his trial. He says, at my first trial, nobody was there. I don't hold against him. But I know what happens next. I've been sentenced to die. He literally is waiting execution. So what does he say? He says, I'm being coiled like a libation. People are still coming to me. I'm still giving it myself. But I know my time is over. It's coming. The writing is literally on the wall. It's coming. But I completed well. I ran the race. I finished. I kept the faith. Paul's not trying to aggrandize himself. He's not saying, aren't I special? Look at me. I mean, Paul's a Pharisee, but we won't hold that against him in this moment. Paul actually is a Pharisee, and he actually says, he says, look, I did what I was supposed to do from start to finish. I'm not perfect, but I know my time is at hand. And I did everything that I had. And that's what we're going to ask ourselves. Are we living life for God? Do we have our mind firmly on that goal? Are we living for the kingdom of heaven? Are we striving for the kingdom of heaven? And don't get me wrong, there's lots of decisions throughout your day that you can make that don't necessarily attract to or pull away from the kingdom of heaven. I'm not worried if you're choosing chocolate over vanilla or vanilla over chocolate. I don't care if you choose the team that's won a World Series in living memory or the other team that may or may not actually win a World Series in living memory. You know, I mean, it may not, who knows? That's not actually the thing about it for a second. I know. There are two Chicago teams. I know everyone forgot about the other team because they're not in the World Series this year, but there are two Chicago teams. These may or may not bring us closer to heaven or further from heaven, no matter what comes to heaven, I tell you. But there are a lot of decisions we make each day that we should begin to ask ourselves, am I striving for the kingdom of heaven, or am I pulling away from heaven? It's a genuine question we should ask ourselves based on, how am I interacting with my family? How am I interacting with my coworkers? How am I treating strangers, neighbors, friends, family? How do I treat the other people on the road? That guy I just cut off, you know, do I do it because I'm malicious? Or because it had to happen? Am I living a life that says I want to keep heaven in mind? Or are we living a life that says I've decided it's not important enough to remember? Because we are either pulling ourselves closer to the kingdom of heaven with each day we pass, or we're pulling away from it. And we have to be asking ourselves genuinely, which one am I doing? Strive always for the kingdom of heaven. Remember the goal. And you will have nothing to fear at the end of the day.